In the late 1970s, there was a television show that I remember watching called Project UFO. And Project UFO started with this sort of eerie music playing, kind of this woo. And then the screen went blank, and you hear this voiceover. And the voiceover starts, "Ezekiel saw the wheel. This is the wheel Ezekiel said he saw." And then there's these little drawings, and then it goes on. It says, "These are unidentified flying objects that people say they are seeing now. Are they proof that we are being visited by civilizations from other stars? Or just what are they? The United States Air Force began an investigation of this high strangeness." That's the actual words. "High strangeness and a search for the truth. What you are about to see is part of that 20-year search." And so as it's going along, there's these drawings, and it begins with this picture of Ezekiel's wheel, and it's this kind of simple little drawing. But if you listen to the reading, I mean, how many of you could picture what Ezekiel was describing? It's kind of a crazy picture, isn't it? I mean, there's wheels, and there's these creatures that have four faces and wings all around, and they can move any direction to the wheels, all these different things. So it's not something we can do, and one writer described it this way. He said, "Imagine trying to do a play-by-play description of a fireworks display." And he said, that's something like what this is like, trying to describe this vision that Ezekiel has, this incredible vision of the appearance. But I want us to look at this vision today, and I think there's a message for us in that vision. Although I don't think it's by dissecting every single little part of the vision and trying to sort out what every little piece. But look at it is this big thing. So Kara shared a little bit of the background of who Ezekiel was. Ezekiel was a member of the priesthood. So his family would have grown up, and he knew that's what he was going to do, was become a priest. And he lived in Jerusalem. And then the Babylonians under Nebuchadnezzar, somewhere around 586, 587, come in and conquer Jerusalem. And they take God's people from Jerusalem to Babylon, to a city called Tel Aviv. And so it's probably ancient Babylon is roughly near where modern-day Baghdad is, about 50, 60 miles outside of modern-day Baghdad. So from Jerusalem to where they were taken into captivity, probably about 900 miles, which on foot would have taken several months' journey. And so they didn't take everybody, though. See, the Babylonians were wise. They would come in, and what they would do is they would come in, they would conquer a country, and they would take the leaders, the rich, the powerful, and they'd leave everyone else behind, and they'd bring in their own people to have people to manage this new country that they had conquered. But they would take the leaders and the organizers away back to Babylon. Why? So they couldn't rise up and revolt. So there was no way to organize. And so Ezekiel, as one of the priesthood, was taken far away to Babylon. And so here he is in exile. And exile is a significant theme. And so what's the significance that they're taken so far away from their home? Why does it matter so much? For the people of God, for the Israelites, there were three significant things that happened when they were taken out of their nation. One was they were taken out of their land that they lived in. And the land for the people of Israel was a significant thing. Why? Because that was part of God's promise to them. Way back, hundreds of years before to Abraham, God had promised the people of God that they would have a land to live in. And they'd been in captivity and slavery, and they'd come out of slavery, and then they'd conquered this land, and they were finally settled in this land. So the land they lived in represented God's promises and God's faithfulness. So now they're no longer living in the land. The other thing that happened is they're taken out of their land, and they're under another king, which means they no longer have a king. And the king represented to them God's rule over them, because the king was God's representative. The other thing that happens when they go into captivity is they're taken away from the temple. And the temple for the people of God was the symbol of God's presence in their midst. So by being taken into captivity, they're losing their sense of God's faithfulness. They're losing their sense of God's rule over them. They're losing their sense of God's presence with them. And so here they are, and here's Ezekiel sitting by the Kabar River. We don't really know a river, a canal, where exactly he was. And it starts off, "In my 30th year." And there's some debate about exactly what that means, but most likely what it means is Ezekiel was at that time 30 years old, which was significant because 30 was the age at which a priest could first begin serving in the temple. So here's his opportunity. He's finally reached the age where he can serve in the temple. It's almost like he's just turned 16, but now there's not a car in sight. He's turned 30. He's ready to be a priest, and there is no temple to serve in. And he's by this river, far away from his home, far away from everything. And then he has this incredible vision. And I want to just highlight a few aspects of the vision. We see this windstorm coming out of the north. And so wind. And so what the Bible does, and I've talked about this before, is often does these things called hyperlinks. One scholar uses this phrase, hyperlinks. So these words and phrases that call us back to other parts of the Bible. And so we think back, where does wind appear in the Bible? Well, wind appears in the very beginning. When the wind or the Spirit of God is hovering over the earth. And then when the flood drowns the earth with Noah, what happens? The wind blows and it drives it back. And wind was often a symbol of God coming. We also see these clouds and lightning. Anybody remember where clouds and lightning show up? When the people of God go to Mount Sinai. And they're there and the mountain of God is covered with clouds and with lightning. And there's these four living creatures, which are also known as the cherubim. And now, depending on where you've grown up and sort of your background, you may think of the cherub or the cherubim as these little round-faced. Have you ever seen the little postcards, the pictures, these little chubby kids with these little baby things? We call cherubs. Did the description of these creatures in here sound anything like the little baby face things in there? No. They're these crazy, wild creatures, but they're the cherubim. Cherubim show up at least two other places in the Bible before this. Anybody remember number one? Cherubim is the creature that is placed at the when Adam and Eve sin against God and they're removed from the garden. What's placed at the gate of the garden to keep them from coming back in? A cherubim. And then the other place the cherubim shows up is when God's people are given instructions to build this holy box, the Ark of the Covenant, the symbol of where God rests, what creatures are sculpted and placed on the top of the golden box? A cherubim. And so these cherubim have this significance of representing the presence, the place of God, as well as this protection. And so all these symbols are tied up in what's going on. But if you were listening to the story, the other thing you got was a sense of what? Of motion, of movement, right? This wasn't something that just kind of sat there. I mean, it talked a lot about the creatures going this way and that way, and they could go in any direction. And I took 2 years of physics in college, and I have no idea how this worked, where they could go in any direction but not change directions. And I don't know what was going on. But so here's this amazing, but it's this picture of God of, how would you describe it? Almost like a chariot, but it's also a throne and this thing that can move in any direction and go anywhere. And there's also a rainbow. All right. We'll try one more Bible quiz. Where does a rainbow show up in the Bible? After the flood, right? And so here again, here's these all these symbols, all these pictures of things that are going on. In some sense, echoes of Genesis, of the early story. In fact, this idea of exile is a consistent theme through the Bible because what happens in that very first story in the Bible? Adam and Eve are in the garden. They disobey God. They choose to rebel, and they're taken out of the garden. In other words, they're put into exile. And so that's in Genesis 3. The story goes along, and they end up, that beginning part of the Bible ends in Genesis chapter 11 because the people build a tower up to God. Does anybody remember the name of that tower, where that place was? Babel, or what does that sound remarkably like? Babylon. Actually, same words. Same words, so Babylon. And so this idea is a theme. So Babylon comes to represent for God's people being apart from God. It represents any sort of idolatry, and it represents choosing powers over. So God's people are familiar with this idea of being exiled, of being removed. So Adam and Eve are removed from the garden. And so this story, and so here again, the people of God, why are they in exile? Because they've disobeyed God. And this is part of it. And so now they're sitting here, and now Ezekiel is sitting by this river, and he has this incredible vision of all these things going on. There's these creatures and things spinning and lights and all this going on. And here's my favorite verse, though, and sounds in the NIV. because I kept reading this and I kept getting this image in my head, which I know is not what Ezekiel was thinking. But he says, as they moved, they would go in any of the four directions the creatures face. The wheels did not change direction as the creatures went. Their rims were high and awesome. And all four rims were full of ice. And I kept thinking of like those cars you see with like the big spinner rims on them. I mean, it's like that. I just kept getting stuck in that verse. Their rims were high and awesome. But I'm thinking this was God. I mean, God didn't show up in a little Honda. He showed up with a car where the rims were high and awesome. I mean, he shows up in this incredible Godmobile with these chariots and flames and the rims spinning, and they're going round and round the lights. And Ezekiel is thinking, wow, what is going on here? So what is going on? What is Ezekiel trying to get at? What is God trying to tell Ezekiel here? And we're in part told in that final verse where it says, this was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. In other words, God has showed up there. The glory of the Lord has showed up there. And why is that significant? Because where was the glory of the Lord supposed to be? In the temple. Over the cherubim in the temple. But here he was. Here was God showing up in exile where Ezekiel was. And it was a reminder to Ezekiel that God is not limited to one place. I mean, we get that. We talk about that all the time, that God is everywhere and God goes anywhere. But for the people then in particular, they had this idea that God was limited in one place. But God is able to go and be with his people even in exile, even when they have disobeyed, even when they are suffering the consequences. God shows up and God is present. In other words, exile does not mean God is absent. There might be this belief, this impression, this thought that maybe now that we've been taken away by the Babylonians, maybe now that we've been taken away from our homeland, now that we have no king, now that we have no temple, now that we are so distant that God is gone. But Ezekiel receives his vision and is reminded that God hasn't gone, that God has not disappeared, but that God is there. And so here's this theme of exile, which comes up again and again. And I mentioned the garden and going into Babel. But it continues on through the Bible. We go into the New Testament, and Peter writes a letter, and he refers to the people of God scattered as exiles, as strangers. We're going back to our Project Blue Book as aliens, right? And so we can come full circle back to our idea of Ezekiel saw a wheel, and he was reminded of aliens, not of little green men, but of the fact that the people of God were aliens and strangers. But what about us today? So we're thinking, okay, that was Ezekiel way back then. But there are a lot of writers who've noted that exile does not have to be physical. It can be spiritual. It can be cultural. Because exile is what? It's a feeling of alienation. It's a feeling of not belonging. It's a feeling of being out of place. It's a feeling of the culture we live in has changed in the way it thinks. There was a writer, Charles Taylor, who wrote this massive book called A Secular Age. It's about an 800-page tome. I haven't read that. I've read James Smith's 200-page condensed version of what Charles Taylor was getting at. But what he talks about was how our thinking has changed. And one of the ways that thinking has changed is, not that long ago in history, belief in God was basically unchallenged. That was part of the normal and natural way that people think, that most people believed in God. But now we move to a time where it's simply one of many options. We've moved away from seeing the possibility of the supernatural. The supernatural for hundreds and thousands of years was simply assumed to be truth, that there was the supernatural, and now, not so much. We've moved away from a culture that was friendly and largely shaped by the church to a culture that is not so. And we moved not to a time where the gods of Babylon, like Marduk, but the gods of pluralism, materialism, and agnosticism. And so in some sense, the church, the people of God, live in exile today, because we live in a time where we feel a little bit out of place. We feel like maybe we don't quite belong, where maybe we don't quite fit in. Maybe we feel like there was a time when things were different. There was a time where God was everywhere, but now God seems to be absent. We live in a time where it maybe feels like God has been pushed out and been pushed away. And this is the message that Ezekiel received, and it's the same message for us, that even though it may look like that, even though it may feel like things are different and things have changed and things have changed, it doesn't mean that God is absent. It doesn't mean that God, the vision that Ezekiel saw reminds us that God is not limited by borders, that God is still present with his people in the midst of exile. And so sometimes we feel like, oh, it's so bad, and God is, everything's going so bad around us. These people had been deported from their country in the midst of death and destruction. And Ezekiel had to give them the message that say, it may look like that all around. It may look like that's what's happening. But remember that God is still on his throne, and he goes where he will and does what he will. And it's the same message for us today, that sometimes we can feel in the church like we're besieged. We can feel like we've been kicked out. We can feel like we've been pushed to the margins. We can feel like we've been deported from the center of power. But the message of Ezekiel is that God is still on his throne and God is still present with us. And this idea of exile is such a great theme, and we'll actually look more at it later in the fall. We're going to be doing two series, one on early on in the stories, the parables of Jesus, and then later in the fall on the prophet Isaiah, and we'll look more at this theme of exile. But I want us to think about just a few things about exile right now. And one is the reminder that God is not constrained by the old way of doing things. For Ezekiel, there was a way of doing things. You went to the temple, and that's where you saw the glory of the Lord. And he sees the glory of the Lord here and was reminded that the old way of doing things does not constrain God. And sometimes in the church, we fall into that habit. We have an idea of there's a way we do things around here. Or there's a way that God has worked in the past. And we've used this illustration before. If you walk into the church there, go take that left path and you take a right, on the wall are a couple pictures of the early days of this church. And you see these hundreds of kids who used to come, and many of them were brought in on buses as the church was formed through Sunday school on a Sunday afternoon. And basically the church started, what is now Forest Park Covenant Church in Muskegon, started here in Fruitland Township and began a series of Sunday schools on a Sunday afternoon. And the neighborhood kids would flock to it, and they'd bring the buses, and then they'd bring their parents along with it. And that was how things worked in the late 1940s and early 1950s. But how many of us think that if we drove around in a bus in the local neighborhood and said, hey, we're having Sunday school on a Sunday afternoon, what are the chances of filling that bus? What are the chances of anyone getting on the bus? What are the chances of somebody throwing things at the bus? And so we realize that we live in a different time, in a different place, that the old way of doing things doesn't work. But does that mean God is incapable of working? No. It doesn't mean God is incapable of working. But instead, what God calls us to do, as he called the exiles to do, was to have new dreams of what God will do, the God who can go anywhere. And to ask ourselves, where is God at work, and how can we live more fully into that? What can we do to respond to this reality of living in exile? What can the church be in its current and future circumstances? So the message, the image that Ezekiel saw is this God who can go anywhere, a God who can enter into exile. And even when we feel in exile, that God is here with us. And so the question is, what is God going to do for the church today in the midst of exile? That God hasn't given up on us. We may feel like we've been pushed out and we have no power, but we have all the power we need in God who shows up. And so the reminder, the image, the story, the vision, the message that Ezekiel gives to us today is that God is here. That God can go and be anywhere. And even when we feel like we've been pushed out, even when we feel like we're sitting by the rivers of Babylon, when we feel like all the old institutions have been taken away, when we feel like the powers are at work, when we feel like Babylon has conquered, we feel like Marduk is sitting there, the message of Ezekiel is that God is still on the throne. and he reigns and he rules and he will bring his people out of exile. In fact, in the story we're going to celebrate in just a few minutes when we gather at the table, that's the reminder that God comes and he brings his people out of exile because he sends his son Jesus to die on a cross. And in some of the last words that Jesus gives to his disciples, he says to them what? He says, I go what? To prepare a place for you, to bring you home. You see, the story of God is not one that ends in exile, but the story of God is one of God who comes and dies and brings us out of exile to bring us home to be with him. And that vision that Ezekiel saw, it was just a glimpse of what that's like, that God does not leave us in exile. God does not abandon us, but instead comes to wherever we are and goes to whatever lengths necessary to bring us home to be with him. So while we may be feeling like we live in exile here, God has not abandoned us, but God will bring us home. And while we are living in exile, God calls us to live out and to be a blessing to the people around us, and to dream and to imagine, what is God doing now in 2019? Not what did God do, and I wish God... No, not what is God doing now, and what will God do in the future? And may we be surprised again and again by the power of God, because that's what it's like. God continually amazes and surprises us. Let's pray together. God, we thank you that you do not leave us in exile, but instead you come to bring us home. God, that this incredible vision that Ezekiel had, a vision, a reminder of your presence and of your power, God, may we experience that again. May we be reminded of your presence and your power, that you come to where we are. And God, may we have dreams and hopes like Ezekiel had of what it looks like to live in exile, but to be your people and to be a blessing. And so may we here at Fruitland Covenant Church find what it means to be a blessing to the people around us. And we ask this all through the power of the Holy Spirit in the name of the risen Christ. Amen.